It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 7th of February, 2023. I hope you were. Hope you are well, in fact, and a very good morning to you. Right, how was your weekend? Hopefully it was relaxing for you and you were able to get some time off. And now you're back, Tuesday. Here we go again, a four-day week, dependent on what hours you work, of course. Right, the lines are open for you. 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and text to that number. Or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Emails come in to us, comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show, hop on to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, laptop, tablet, etc. The same on Facebook, the Facebook app or Facebook Watch, and also on our website, highlandradio.com. Right, lots to get through. So let's crack on with a look at the papers and start with some positive news from the front of the Derry Journal. Recruitment's already underway after financial services IT firm Fintru announced 300 new jobs for Derry as part of a £20 million investment. The company, based at former City Factory on Patrick Street, will now see its Derry workforce double over the next 4 years. InvestNI supporting the new roles announced after the fast-growing, globally recognised firm last year unveiled another expansion in Letterkenny. On to the Donegal Democrat, and there's widespread shock and sadness in the close-knit fishing community at news that a fisherman drowned while fishing off the Donegal coast. The man, believed to be in his 30s and originally from Eastern Europe, went overboard from the crab vessel on which he was fishing approximately 65 miles northwest of Arranmore on Saturday evening. Weather conditions were challenging at the time, with a 3 to 4 metre swell and high winds. Having received a Mayday call at 8:30 p.m, Malinhead Coast Guard coordinated a mission involving Arranmore lifeboat and the R118 helicopter on arrival. They found that the man had been recovered from the water by crewmates who administered CPR. Sadly, the young fisherman was pronounced dead on board. Our sympathies with his family and friends and work colleagues. And again, not a pleasant evening for our rescue crews to be boating and flying out as they do. The Irish Times this morning, and awful scenes coming out of Turkey and Syria. I think you would all agree. Just absolutely shocking, the absolute force of nature, the complete and utter devastation, the initial impact. But then I'm sure you've all seen those videos of buildings just apparently randomly collapsing. Of course, it's not random, but, you know, after the fact, they seem of sound, you know, in a sound position. And then next thing, they just come down like a house of cards. And then those images of people halfway up a multi-story building looking out where the front of the building used to be. You can see their bathrooms and, you know, the insides of their properties. They not knowing if theirs is to fall next. They've got the death toll here on the front of the paper is 3,000. We know that's going to increase greatly. It's going to be in multiples of that. These stories, as they are covered, are always the same. But there will come a period where people will be buried. And so much time will have passed that they will not expect anyone to be found alive. And it's at that point, really, when you start seeing the death toll increase dramatically. Absolutely horrendous scenes. I'll read from the front of the paper here. International rescue missions were rushing to Turkey and Syria last night after one of the most powerful earthquakes to hit the region in at least a century left more than 3,000 people dead, thousands injured, and an unknown number trapped in rubble. The early morning quake and dozens of aftershocks wiped out entire apartment blocks in Turkey and heaped more destruction on Syrian communities already devastated by years of war. And civil war in Syria is actually complicating rescue missions there. Pledges of emergency assistance to both countries have poured in from the globe, with calls from Damascus to allow aid into northwest Syria, the last rebel-held enclave and one of the area's worst hit. Tánaiste and Minister for Foreign Affairs Micheál Martin said Ireland stands ready to support local and international relief efforts. The magnitude 7.8 quake was followed by a second 7.5 quake in the middle of the day. By the early evening, the death toll in Turkey stood at 1,762. But as we know, and as I mentioned, that death toll is going to be many multiples of that. And just the apps, you can just only imagine what people are going through there. That being said, some of the imagery does bring back recent memories. So there is certainly an understanding of that kind of event and devastation very clear in our minds here in Donegal. On to the Irish Independent now. Exam chiefs struggling to recruit Leaving Cert examiners are hoping a pay boost will encourage teachers to give up some of their Easter holidays to run the orals. Rates being offered to teachers for each student they interview will be almost three times what they were in 2019. It includes an Easter premium of £10.50 per candidate to reflect the change in timing to bring the exams into the first week of the Easter break, as also happened in 2022. This is on top of a €6 per student satisfactory completion fee introduced as an incentive in 2022, while general pay increases have enhanced the basic rate. Oral examiners working for 5 days and typically covering 14 to 18 interviews per day would expect to earn between €1,616 and €2,614, according to the State Examination Commission, on top of a basic fee of €235, they'll receive €26 per candidate for most oral tests, compared with €938 in 2009. So hopefully they get the numbers that are required to complete that task, so there's no delays down the line. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and the Attorney General will present a report to Cabinet this morning on the state's secret strategy to conceal liability for nursing home charges. It comes after revelations in the Irish Mail on Sunday on the legal strategy to deal with those wrongly charged for nursing home care. The state faced the prospect of a £12 billion liability in compensation for hundreds of thousands of families who were charged for the care of their loved ones over a 30-year period. Now, there are people who have texted in this show and sort of said this is a disgrace, this shouldn't have been going on and all that kind of stuff. But I'm not sure we have received any communications from anyone who this affects, who would be maybe seeking redress or who have told us stories of great loss. Now, that's just to be completely honest with you. Obviously, people are reading the headlines and think this is terrible what was going on, but we have not really received any calls. And we would normally, ordinarily, even just messages saying this affected me and this happened or that happened. But we really have not been contacted by anyone, unless I'm not aware, who has said this, as a result of this, this happened to us, and so on and so forth, which I don't know what that says. Obviously, a lot of the people it might have affected maybe have passed on, but you would imagine there are some families out there that are still feeling the negative impacts of it. But as I say, they haven't reached out to this program. That is somewhat unusual. I'm not saying they're not out there, but we're receiving messages from people saying it's a it should never have happened. This is typical, this and typical that, you know what I mean? And we've read many of those out, but no one who has given out because it affects them or being able to tell how it affected them. So if you're out there and you want to share your story, please get in touch, 0860 25000, or it's possible that maybe there aren't people affected in such numbers that they're out there to give us a call. I don't know, we're just I'm just trying to figure that out. On to the Irish Daily Star now, and a leading surgeon has said going bald can traumatise and make some men suicidal. Dr. Morris Collins, who runs Hair Restoration BlackRock, said the psychological impact of losing hair can be incredibly damaging for a person. It's not something I think is talked about much really anymore, is it? The medic also urged Irish men who want a hair transplant to speak to a doctor and warned of the risks of going abroad. Speaking to the Star, Dr. Collins said for some men, when they start going bald, they must trim their hair very short, accept the hair loss and get on with their life. But for others, they will become deeply, deeply traumatised, even suicidal, over their hair loss. And we have spoken to people in the past who have been very affected by it, of course. If you want to talk about that again, get it out there, 086 60 25000. This seems like a good idea, reported in the Irish Daily Mail. A school is saving cash-strapped parents hundreds of euro by offering First Holy Communion dresses and suits to children for free. Hundreds of dresses, suits and veils, shoes and bags were snapped up over the weekend by parents, many of whom were astonished when they discovered there was no charge on the complete outfits. The event was organised by the Parents Association of St Declan's National School in Ashburn, County Meath, who had been collecting donations of pre-loved dresses and suits over the past year. Spokesperson Keeveen Gore said O'Keefe Agora, beg your pardon, said, we had more than 100 dresses and about 80 suits, as well as dozens of pairs of shoes, bags, and about 40 veils. And they're putting people in contact with each other. I'm sure many people out there have these items. Is it the type of thing you hold on for emotional reasons? I'm not sure, but there are others out there that they would have, maybe something like that could be organised here, some sort of a network. Kiva goes on to say, First Communion outfits can be costly and put extra pressure on parents at this time of the year, so we decided to try and reduce the stress. The weekend was incredible. We have about 20 dresses and 4 veils left, which we will probably hold on to and try and replicate the event next year. We held this sale in a shop in the town, so it felt like a real shopping experience for the children for their big day. So a big thank you to Ashbourne High Street for the use of their unit. So they had the sort of day out as well. And the children were probably none the wiser, but mums and dads and guardians were able to pick up their dresses and suits for that one-off day. And a lot of them change out of them too, don't they, on the day? For nothing, which is great, and hopefully now they'll be able to pass them forward again. Finally, in the Sun this morning, marriage or cohabiting can cut your risk of type 2 diabetes, a new study has suggested. Researchers found couples have lower blood sugar levels, whatever the state of their relationship. They tracked 3,300 adults aged 50 to 89 for 9 years from 2004. Some 3/4 were wed or cohabiting. They had a 0.21% lower blood sugar than singles, meaning they were less likely to develop diabetes. Those not with a partner had more chance. The study, published on BMG Open Diabetes Research and Care, revealed marital or cohabiting relationships were inversely related to blood sugar levels, regardless of spousal support or strain. So simply living with your partner or being married to them reduces your blood sugar levels and therefore your risk of type 2 diabetes, according to that. So stay where you are. Okay, our first item on the programme today is concerns over the future of the Milford Gardist District, really, in effect. We're joined by two guests to discuss this. John McAteer joins us first. Good morning, John. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. Fine, thank you.
Very good. That radio's on in the background, I presume. Yep.
We'll. Exactly the sound of your voice.
Sorry, I don't want to hear myself twice. Noel McBride's also going to be joining us as well. Good morning to you, Noel. Thanks very much for joining us. Former mayor, of course. Right, okay. John, give us the background to this. This is all part of a shake-up, but maybe you can set the stage for us there.
It's a very big shake-up entirely right across the whole country. And this was put on hold during COVID. It has been reported in the local media. You were reporting it yourself as far back as 2019. Garda management will be arguing that by the regionalisation policy that they're adopting for counties like Donegal across the northwest, that's going to leave for a fitter, leaner machine to manage. Now, the Garda Representative Association totally disagree with that, and they remain to be convinced that that this will work out, and they point to other services that were rationalised and brought back into Dublin effectively. The benefits of that did not accrue out in rural areas. In fact, it seems to happen that where you take services away from a place like Milford, as we expect their headquarters will go, the personnel and the services there, they tend to migrate with it, to the extent we saw what happened in Glentis 10 years ago, back in the day they had 52 officers there, and very quickly, within a couple of years, they were down to a handful. It is that whole thing of what do you cut out of rural Ireland, what do you leave behind? Effectively, government services are just going, gone. We don't have enough police on the roads, we don't see enough of them. They do a good job, they're there. When we need them most, they're there, as we see, road traffic accidents, all of these kind of things. But community policing is about looking after the community and being involved in the community and getting to know the community. And how can Gardaí that are based so far away have any input or any contact with the community? I mean, already we're just looking at stations where Gardaí are assigned to as in community roles. They're rarely, if ever, on duty there. They're brought back into Milford just to make up the numbers to keep the division taken over. It's personnel we need, not rationalisation. and we need more of them, because you know it's okay saying that the days of the Garda on foot in the local town is over. There's nobody arguing with that. What we're arguing with is the fact that if you're going to take those services away, those vital services, we're never going to see them coming back here.
It's not really been properly explained, has it? And maybe there was an opportunity when Drew Harris was recently in Donegal, how these changes improve policing. Now, we're told that because this will happen, that will happen, and it will be able to do this, that, and the, but there's no explanation as to how these measures will actually improve policing, really, or even maybe, you know, a visible policing model.
It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen, because where it's already more advanced than in Donegal, as it is down the country, there's no evidence that it is showing any improvements at all, according to our sources in the GRA, and they're totally opposed to it. The general public has remained very aloof on this. As I said, this was taking some shape around 2019, and then COVID came along. For 3 years, we've had very, very little by the way of movement. But this work and this progress behind the scenes to make sure that these districts are reconfigured, they're pretty well advanced. Now, I understand that from April onwards, we're going to see changes in Milford. Effectively, if we lose the district headquarters in Milford, as is predicted by people very close to the scene, the service that a district office brings will go to Letterkenny. I mean, how are you going to police the Milford area from Letterkenny, given the size of it? You're going to be policing. Letterkenny will be policing that area of Glentis, along the Guibara and across the river around that area. Glentis, Letterkenny, Duhurry, those areas, they'll be policed from Ballyshannon. We don't see or hear tell of any extra Gardaí or any extra resources at all coming into the Milford district. It's quite evident to us for numbers of years. Mm. And Gardaí are in a very difficult position, because they can't say very much about this. They're in this very difficult position that they can't talk to the media. We can talk to them right enough. They might not be listening to us very much. But we do gather from GRA representatives that there are difficulties. You don't have to gather it from anyone. You can see it. The absence of Garda patrols at night time is quite startling. I'm driving 16 miles from home. I'm 16 miles home every night. I rarely. I think I was stopped maybe last September. Mm. You know, it's not that you need to be stopped every day of the week, but you simply don't see them.
It's the visible presence, and in and around. It is somewhat different in the south of the county compared to sort of your Milford, Carrigart, Downings, all that kind of an area. The Gardaí just don't seem to be quite as visible down there as they are elsewhere. Stay with me, of course, John. The former mayor of Donegal and former councillor Noel McBride is with us as well. Do you believe this will make a difference as to what's already there? I mean, what's your feelings on it, Noel? What's the mood on the ground?
Well, the first thing I'll say is, look, the day Drew Harris was in Lufford meeting the GPC, he was very cagey with his information, I understand. And that's just from people contacting me afterwards that were concerned about it. What I see is, look, we take, for example, the Carrigart Downings area, the parish of Meath, where I live, the Fannet area. We are basically losing our rural Garda stations. Our rural Garda are not really there anymore. They come and go. The station's open for a while. Other stations are closed completely. That is not the way the rural areas should be policed. Donegal generally has approximately 6,000 kilometres of road, public road. Now, how is that to be policed under the current situation? It's not been done currently, so if changes take place and Milford loses it's on the verge basically of not being a 24-hour station.
Well, look, if you ring it now and say such and such is happening in, you mentioned Carrigart there, your call is diverted to Galway anyway. I mean, are we really trying to fight to save something here that's already gone?
Well, I think we need to start this fight again. And I'll give you an example. Now, John might have more information on this than me. But I understand, well, geographically, if you look at the county of Donegal and look at County Kerry, fairly similar, you know, a coastal area. Kerry, I understand, has got a stand-alone Garda district. Okay. And Kerry, I don't know how well it's working, but I would say it's working a lot better than what we're talking about here. We make a phone call, it goes to Galway. Now, the person in Galway hasn't a clue about, they might hear of Fannet Head, they might hear of Atlantic Drive, but they may not hear of Cairngorm outside Carrigart. They may not hear of Mulroy. They may not hear of Glensk and Fannet. You know, those names will only register in the local Garda's head. If the local Garda station gets a call, something has happened.
But let me put it just for the sake of trying to be fair. The ambulance service and the fire service, they operate okay, with the calls triaged, not locally.
Well, can I give you a very simple example?
Yep.
I had a situation myself one day where an ambulance had to be called. Fortunately enough, I was okay. But I was just across at parked at St. Connell's Hospital. Mm. I had passed out in the car. Nobody knew what was happening. I was out of it. Particular lady called the ambulance, 999, right away. The call went to wherever, but that person hadn't a clue where St. Connell's Hospital was.
Yeah.
And that was it, you know. But in general terms, look, as I said, Donegal in general it's a big county. Its land border with Northern Ireland is 96-98%. Like, that in itself could create its own problems. We welcome many, many visitors from Northern Ireland every year, and in particular to our own area of Carrigart, Downings, and the parish of Meva. Take, for example, around the 12th of July time, the population in the parish of Meva, it could quadruple.
But you do see an increased Garda presence as a result, though. I mean, is that not the kind of flexible, reactionary type of force that maybe Drew Harris is trying to refine here?
I would have my doubts, to be honest with you. I'd be very
doubtful. Come back to you in a second. Okay. John, did you hear anything from Drew Harris that sort of recognised Donegal's unique geography? Of course, we're surrounded by the sea and Northern Ireland, really. We have this tiny, tiny little connection with Leitrim. It is not the same as Kerry, an example that was given there. And also to recognise the fact that it's not just you and Noel and me and the listeners that know where there could be gaps in policing now going forward. You know, criminals are very well organised. They're very intelligent, not to give them any credit, but, you know, they know what's going on as well. It's not all about checkpoints and what have you. You know, every action is a reaction. Do you think this could lead to sort of an increase in crime in certain areas with these types of changes?
Absolutely, absolutely. The presence of Gardaí prevents crime. Absolutely they do. That has always been the case. But over the years, going back, as you will know, Noel, probably over 30 years ago, we've been losing police officers. They're assigned to various districts, let it be Carrigart, Rathmullen, there's no station in Remelton at the moment, let it be Kirriekeel, Churchill, but they're not there because they're required back at headquarters in Mulford to be part of manning the service for the day and for the night. And like that has gone on almost under our eyes. I mean, I'm driving past a couple of Garda stations at least once a day, mostly twice a day. I rarely, if ever nowadays, see a Garda on duty or a Garda car present at that station. They're just locked up and they're forgotten about because the manpower's not there. Of course, we have a political system here that should have some input into this insofar as the Department of Justice is concerned. Services are being taken out of remote areas. Okay, crime is much, much lower. But I keep arguing that back in the day, and you'll remember this, Noel, we've had a spate of thefts of copper cable here in this area.
Yeah.
It's gone on for a number of years. We also had, unfortunately, far too many road fatalities. We had far too much joyriding. It was the vigilance of the Gardaí and their persistence in pursuing that at a local level that put an end to that. And I remember the former inspector, Michael Harrison, coming into Milford in place of a trooper who had been transferred elsewhere. And Michael Harrison flooded the place with resources until he got that resolved, and he did very, very quickly. Now, it is that local policing element that can deliver success. But you take that away over a period, we'll go back to the bad old ways and the bad old days all over again. I have no doubt about that, because you can't leave a full area from Fannet Head to Dunlow and from Letterkenny to Glentiesden away beyond that with reduced numbers of policing. We're not going to have dozens of extra policing in the area. The exact opposite is going to be the case, and that's what the Garda Representative Association fear. And they know that that's happening. And they're at a loss in so much as we are in the media. We don't get any feedback anymore from like, if this was 20 years ago, there'd be protests outside Kirriekeel Garda Station, as there were back in days about the phone masts. But we're losing services, and your post office is gone, your banks are gone, we've lost schools. Now the Gardaí, what's left to take away from us? I don't know.
Yeah, and the thing too, I'll put it to Noel and you, John, as well. I mean, obviously there's a reality, right? There's a reality of what might happen, but there's also a perception about people feeling safe in their homes, you know, and I'm thinking of vulnerable people, maybe older people. I'm not saying those two cohorts are the same, but, you know, it's this sense that, will they feel safe if they don't see a guard from one end of the month to the other? You know, it's about how people feel as well, Noel.
Yeah, look, my opinion of policing is community policing. The Gardaí need to be visible within the community, and John has said it there. If Gardaí are in an area, if the Gardaí car is seen, if Gardaí personnel are seen in the area, then it gives people, you know, say the elderly people or whatever, vulnerable people, that bit of confidence.
But we do hear about community police walking the streets of Letterkenny, some on bikes, maybe the Twin Towns. Yeah. You know, community policing, there is some there, but why is it only in those population centres?
We need more of that. We need it in the local communities. We need it, I understand our Garda in Carrigart has his bicycle there, and I think I met him once out on his bicycle. Now, I'd be away in the morning.
He might be waiting for that cycle from Carrigart to Downs.
the footpath. It's on the way to, hopefully. But, you know, we're talking about the Garda here today. They need the resources. And to be honest with you, to be very honest with you, look, our politicians, our senior politicians, have been very, very quiet.
Yes. And John, Noel made a good point there. The Gardaí on the ground near the backing as well, because morale is at an all-time low, I think. I don't think that's an exaggeration. And as you said quite rightly, they can't really speak out en masse. You can have one person that can come out and represent some of the concerns. But, you know, they're struggling to recruit Gardaí. They're struggling to retain Gardaí. And the morale of those that are within the force is at an all-time low. I mean, it's not a bit wonder, is it, really? I mean, and this is not an accident. This is all has been of management's making.
And it's been going on for long numbers of years, you know, 20, 25 years at the very least. Probably Milford would have been one of the heavily policed districts back in the day, because of IRA activity and stuff like that. That era is now passed on, but so has the numbers of Gardaí. We talk about Letterkenny having officers in community, and Letterkenny is a very big town, and if you're talking to the Gardaí there, they would feel that they do not have the resources needed at all. And I've been hearing that. But you contrast Letterkenny with the likes of Milford, and the fact that half of the Glentis area belongs to Milford, they're trying to cover that with very little resources at times. I mean, I've seen Gardaí driving from Annagry to incidents here at Fannet Head, maybe an hour and a half on the road, and the tyres burning on the cars. It's not the way to do police. But the other point I wanted to make about community policing, a big part of policing is getting to know the community that you serve. And if they're not in the community and they're not meeting these people, I mean, obtaining information has to come from the public. A Gardaí can't wave a magic wand and say, like, we have got a suspect for this particular crime or whatever. The community has to have the trust in a Garda to lift a phone and say, look, I have a suspicion. You don't have community Gardaí, that's not going to happen. this, and it is a nonsense about community Gardaí being in various stations. It's just not there, because the Gardaí are called away to Milford. They're called away to whatever other stations are there. But like, we go back to the whole issue of funding. It's all down to funding.
Yeah.
You can streamline all you like. Like, we see what happens when banking services are streamlined. It just disappears out of that village. It never comes back. And you have to travel well outside of your area to find a bank that is opened.
Yeah.
And I mean, where are we going to stop with this? Or is this the end of it?
Well, I mean, we're not resisting it. Noel, John talked of maybe in the past this might have led to a protest or a gathering somewhere or other. We just, at this point now, I don't know for what reason, why, and I'm not calling people out into the streets, don't get me wrong. But, you know, if there is no resistance, it's just going to happen. You know, we can talk and we can, people can text in and all that, but this is not going to not happen if people don't do something, or at least politicians maybe do something about this. I don't know. What do you think?
Okay. Well, okay, number one, I don't agree with protests, because protests can get out of hand.
Ah, come on, Noel.
Well, they can. I don't agree with public protests, and that's personal opinion, might be wrong. But we have our local representatives, we have our local councillors, we have our local TDs.
Yeah, but you protest when you believe that they're not doing the work for you. That's
But those, but look, if you want to have a protest, they could have a public meeting. Okay, it's not this protest where you're out shouting and placards and all the rest. Get into a public building, get into a hall, get into whatever. Have a public meeting. Invite them along. Let the public have their say. But it's up to the... Take, for example, Drew Harris came to meet the JPC in Lifford there a couple of weeks ago. Now, I understand from John's paper from the Tyrconnell Tribune and from different people contact me after that Drew Harris was cagey with his comments. He was holding back. He wasn't really giving the JPC the facts, which I think was, if that's what he was doing, that's incorrect, because he should have been giving the JPC the facts. And if there's a situation in Milford, if there's a situation with Donegal being taken over by a wider area, we don't want that in Donegal. And I've given you the example of Kerry. Now, I think if our TDs...
Well, a caller says the difference between Donegal and Kerry are... You know what I'm going to say here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The Healy Rays.
The Healy Rays, yeah. Well, the Healy Rays are there. They fought the coroner. They got the resources in place. I understand. Stand to be corrected on it. I don't have full information.
Another says this wouldn't have happened under Neil T. Blaney's watch.
May not. Neil T. Blaney was an excellent politician for our county in the day. He got a lot of good work done, not only in Donegal, but throughout the country, and I would have had great respect for the man, you know. But we have our TDs there, we have our councillors. They need to stand together and they need to work together to fight the coroner on behalf of the people of Donegal.
Nice.
I was there. I'm not there anymore. If I was there today, I'd be calling on everyone in Donegal County Council. Look, we all need to, shoulder to shoulder.
I think that is the case, and that's
that
why
is the case.
Yeah, it really is. I don't think anyone's pulling in opposite directions. It's doing anything.
They just need to start talking about it. They need to start knocking on the doors in Dublin.
All right.
But you know, this issue has been raised in the Dáil and has been raised in the Senate, going back to Breen O'Donnell in 2012, Pat the Cope in 2018, and Charlie McConnell Logue just this time 3 years ago. And he was raising a very strong issue after a piece on your show that Councillor Liam Blaney was doing. Greg, you probably don't remember any of that. But Charlie McConnell Logue addressed the Dáil about it.
He really has no faith in me, this man, at all. We're on the radio, John.
You have no memory. Charlie McConnell Logue was making very valid points about Gardaí from outlying stations been drafted in to fill the headquarter numbers in Milford, and it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
And he said it just goes back to under resourcing of the Gardaí Force in County Donegal, and that is just saying it all, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's under the resources to provide a policing service that's worthy.
Well, just lastly, what can the people of Milford do then? I mean, this is we can talk and we can express people's views on it, but beyond that, it's a fait accompli, John, is it?
nothing's a fait accompli until it's actually delivered. Now, there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes to redraw the boundaries. And as I understand it, it's a couple of months away yet. People can write to the papers. They can get on the wireless with you. They can just air their opinions and hope that they'll be listened to. I think what's happening now, people have lost trust and faith, and they've lost confidence in the political system. It's probably hardly surprising, but you just can't go ignoring the fact that we're losing major services in the Milford district and in the Glentis district, because they're becoming even more remote again. Donegal is going to be all that worse off as a consequence of these changes. And it's all right for saying Drew Harris came to JPC. Drew Harris is a very professional policeman.
I wonder, is it a coincidence, but this feels very much that the closer you are to Sligo, the better off you are. You know what I mean? If you think of what's in Ballyshannon, Bundoran, Donegal Town, and as you head west, as you head north, that distance from Sligo, which will probably be the operational centre of the new district, it just seems to fade away, if that makes sense. I wonder, is that an accident?
Drew Harris wouldn't even answer the question whether the divisional headquarters would be Sligo or Letterkenny. He just told former Surgeon James Treaty, I don't micromanage my officers. I mean, this is as close as an answer you're going to get from Drew Harris. He came down here to sell the whole idea of regionalisation of police. He'd done a very professional job of it, and he left quite happy. I'm not saying that the JPC members were happy. They know exactly what's going on. I mean, if he's going to come here on a charm offensive, that's fine, but that's not what policing's about, and that's not what good policing should be about.
All right, John McAteer, as always, thank you very much indeed. Great to have you on the show. See you soon.
Thank you.
All right, take care. And Noel McBride, former mayor, councillor, you say everyone needs to get their shoulder to the wheel on this then.
Yeah, most certainly. Look, you know, the general public can contact their local TDs, contact, as John said, the local paper here, papers, yourselves and Highland Radio. Start the conversation and get our politicians involved. Mm. And, you know, it goes up the line and it has to go all the way to Dublin, and we have to fight our corner for Donegal and for the Milford area. If we don't fight it, it'll not be fought for us.
All right, Noel McBride, thanks for your time. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Okay, Connell joins us now. Hi, Connell.
Morning, Greg.
Thanks for taking the call. What's your view?
Well, you have been discussing their community policing and working with the community on that. I think there needs to be far more joined up thinking about how we have things like that. From this perspective, I mean, there's a Garda station there on the way into Port New on the Glentis Road, and it's a large on an acre site. But the accommodation section there is a very fine building, but it has been unoccupied for over 30 years and it's fallen into terrible disrepair. Now, the Garda station is seldom used, but it is a separate door, but it has been maintained by the OPW. It's at the side of the building, you know. But 5 years ago, Nairn Port New Respect Community Co-op, which I'm a member, we have 300 shareholders in a small area, like we're a community group with a Dolman Centre and that. And we approached the Garda authorities about getting a lease on this building, because there's a huge emphasis now on state buildings lying idle. They shouldn't be lying idle, and even private buildings, the state should use them, you know, for whatever. We approached the Garda authorities. On the 12th of September 2018, senior personnel from the OPW and the Garda Síochána met us on the site. And they said, look, they opened the building and the creaking of the door and the smell of dust coming out and mould coming out of the building. I said, look, they said, we have no call of this anymore. You're the ideal people to get a lease on this for 10 years, and you can do it up and you can use it because you have a plan to use it for a facility. And I was absolutely delighted, as members of our own committee were, at that breakthrough, you know, because we thought it great rather than this building with the waste, and we needed the space at the time, and we still need it. But even if we didn't need it, it could have been put into two apartments, you know, whatever, rather than letting the whole building go to waste, the state-owned building. The pressure went on since that, and on and on and on, and it's almost 5 years now, and I've really given up on it, you know.
What happened after that positive meeting that left it where it is now, I wonder, Connell?
Pardon?
Why has there been no progress? Can you give us your best guess as to why?
Well, I think the executive of the state is... politicians really want... Most politicians want to see community development, and they want to see more, and they want to see progress. But the executive of the state is so bogged down in archaic rules that make no sense whatever in the world that we are today, that a building like that is going to waste, couldn't be given to us who are a legitimate community group in the area. And that would help community policing too. And they have this small barrack beside it that's joined on, but there's a separate door, but they're maintaining that. But it's like a lot of these small guard stations, effectively, there's no point in saying they're being used because they're not really being used at all. You know,
what could have space been used for to benefit the community, Connell?
Pardon?
What could this space been used for to benefit the community?
Well, we needed it at that time. There were changes in the Family Resource Centre, and we thought it a great place to have. We were under pressure at the Donald Centre for space, and this was ideal space for to have part of the Family Resource Centre located there. And we knew then that we could avail of funding if we had a 10-year lease from the Gardaí authorities, from the Estates Division of Gardaí Síochána and the OPW. If we could get a lease in that building for 10 years, we could avail of funding to fix it up. But even, say if we weren't to get it, and the shortage of housing and everything, and state-owned property that's very good, that they could give it to the council, lease it to them, and do two nice apartments in it for families or something, you know. Even, and that's, there's no point pretending that these Garda stations are over Donegal or are being used, but they're very good community groups in every parish, and they would work with the Garda, and, you know, community policing, it would all work, and it would gel together in a comprehensive kind of way, because they'd be calling in there occasionally, and they would know what's going on, and, you know, rather than the building just going to waste, which is very sad, I think, you know.
No, you're right. I mean, it makes a lot of sense, Connell.
Like that.
Yeah, it makes sense. And also, too, you know, even though it's being maintained, a constant presence within it would maintain the structure. You know, the heat would be on.
Part of it,
you know,
it's only the guard station that's been maintained. The rest of the building is falling down.
Oh, well, that's a heartbreak, that is. And it's red tape, really, a lack of will. Is that...
Yeah, and I think politicians have tried their best to resolve this matter, but it seems to be bogged down in old rules that are just out of date at the present time.
Yeah, okay,
and,
well,
you know,
we know rules can be changed now at the drop of a hat, so hopefully maybe something might come of it.
But also, I mean, the point also is that your radio's coming out all the time about derelict buildings that the state owns and that private people own, that they should be, that they should be facilities made for, to, you know, convert them into housing or apartments or whatever. And if the state owns this building, they should do something with it, even if they don't give it us at all.
Okay. We'll see what happens. Connell, thank you very much for your time this morning. The sun is shining in some household today because the National Lottery has confirmed that Donegal's latest €1 million lotto winning ticket was sold in Burnfoot. And Margaret Turris is the owner of Burnfoot Service Station. Congratulations to you, Margaret. It's always nice to make someone's... I was going to say make someone's day, but make someone's life by selling them such a valuable ticket.
It's great, Greg. Thank you for having us on the show. We are delighted. It's just, it's unreal at the moment. Everybody's still so excited.
And how do you find out that you have sold the winning ticket, Margaret?
Well, on Sunday night, Parik rang me to say that we had a €1 million winning ticket in our shop. So you can imagine the excitement in the house at that time. So then... when we come into the shop in the morning, then it was just all buzz.
Now,
everybody was...
Sorry, the line's just dropped out there, unfortunately, but it's picked back in again. Now, Margaret, we don't know. It's up to the whoever is the winner to say whether they've won it or not. It's their right to privacy and all that. But obviously, everyone's... The big buzz around town, I'm sure, is who bought this winning ticket.
We had great crack and speculation yesterday now. One of our locals, Dennis, he wanted a picture with one of the signs, and there was a lot of speculation there. Even on social media, you'll see there's people putting up posts with fancy cars, and but
people are having a crack with
it. Yes, definitely. But we have a lot of passing trade to the Inishowen Peninsula on holidays, and we have the engineer, D&I engineering beside us, and then you have all your locals and your passing trade. So there's a big wide range of people there.
Yep, the who owns that ticket, they could be from anywhere, really, effectively. They're not necessarily from the local area. And a lot of people, and I know a few of them, like to buy their tickets not in the local shop for some reason. They think it's better luck that you always hear these stories of someone buying a random ticket during a journey. So maybe that's part of it too as well. But well, listen, go ahead, Margaret.
Well, and you now, before this, our biggest one was 2000. We had one in the Maybank holiday weekend. We had one in the Halloween bank holiday weekend. And then yesterday, which was Friday, on the St. Bridget's bank holiday weekend. So we're very lucky that there is something about us and the lotto on the bank holiday weekends.
We know where, I know where I'm going next long
you
weekend.
Know you're
I'll see you there. Come here.
For sure.
But maybe you, maybe because it's quick pick two, which is nice to see, maybe you bought it, Margaret, and you'll keep it on the queue too, and part of the cover story is you're going to go on Highlands and then no one will suspect it's you.
Well, you never know. I'm saying nothing.
Okay, listen, congratulations. I'm sure everyone's having the crack with it as well, and it's good to get some good news.
I would like to wish whoever has won the ticket on the €1 million all the best of luck from all of us here in Burnfoot Service Station, and I hope it brings them a lot of good luck and to pay off maybe some bills and years of happiness and good health.
And I think it's that kind of amount that would set you up, but it wouldn't drive you crazy either.
Definitely. And it is a very nice amount.
Yeah.
I do believe that hopefully it'll make someone very happy.
I'm sure it will. All right, Margaret, listen, thank you so much and for being a good sport. I really appreciate you coming on. Take care of yourself and best...
And Greg, thank you very much for having us on your show. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's our pleasure and best wishes to everybody. Margaret Turish there, owner of Burnfoot Service Station. Was it you? Are you a millionaire? Wouldn't it be nice? Okay, I'd love it. Just want to let you know that a charity tractor run in memory of Patsy McLaughlin is taking place on Sunday, the 19th of February. It's €20 per tractor to enter. Entry fee includes a burger and a drink. All proceeds in aid of the orthopaedic ward in Letterkenny University Hospital. Now, registration is from 11:30 a.m. on Sunday, the 19th. Leaving McLaughlin's yard at 1:30 p.m. sharp, returning to Pine Hill Industrial Estate, Mountain Top. Raffle on the day at 4 p.m. Permit granted. So if you want to get dust off the tractor for a tractor run, you can do that on Sunday, the 19th of February. It's in memory of Patsy McLaughlin and all proceeds in aid of the orthopaedic ward in Letterkenny University Hospital. Registration on the morning at 11:30, leaving McLaughlin's yard at 1:30 p.m. sharp and then returning to Pine Hill Industrial Estate, Mountain Top. Raffle on the day at 4 p.m. So maybe that's something that you want to get involved in and support a great cause there.